Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 119 of Season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Hal Bryan of so many different things. He'll tell you all about him, but including the October Sky Minute, which is currently still running. Welcome back to the show, Hal.
Thanks for having me back, Rob. These are always fun to do.
Yep, it's been a lot of fun all week. I've learned a lot about helicopters, probably more than I ever thought I would know about them. But the trick will have to be trying to remember about helicopter earphones or plane earphones or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, just remember, look for green headsets and then smile in quiet satisfaction when you recognize them.
Okay. I will do that.
Perfect.
All right. And minute 119 begins with John realizing what's going on and ends with John needing to save Zeus again.
Of course.
Exactly. So we ended things yesterday with, John and Zeus in the helicopter finally getting assaulted by Simon and Katya in their helicopter, and their smoke started filling the cabin, and they weren't really sure what's going on. And Zeus seemed to be a little bit panicked, especially wondering why he decided that he actually wanted to be a part of this. And today we begin with a great, I guess it's called a dolly shot, about the fact that, you know, you see the camera moving back and forth, moving the occupants of the helicopter, showing that the helicopter is in distress, type of thing. I don't know if you've ever been, have you ever been in a helicopter or plane that was in distress?
Certainly never, never a helicopter that was in distress. I've had emergencies in airplanes before. Never smoke in the cockpit, anything like that. And never,
Zeus screaming at you.
Right. I've never had Samuel L. Jackson there screaming at me, telling me what to do. I've had emergencies with, engine failures before. It's high stress and there's adrenaline involved, but it's not, it's not frantic and loud. It's kind of the opposite. It's when things get quiet that you get sort of concerned, but it's all at that point, it's about, you know, flying the airplane and doing everything very smoothly. So this whole sort of, in movies, the trope of something's gone wrong and now the aircraft is just flying wildly, erratically, that's almost always wrong. You know, in this case, the helicopter's been hit by a bullet and we're seeing it, you know, sort of struggling to maintain control. It's more likely that you were just having like an oil leak or something like that, and that the engine is hurting and we just need to land very, very quickly. But again, that doesn't look as cool as, you know, wiggling the helicopter all over the place and then coming in for kind of a rougher landing, sliding along on the skids. Whereas I'm hard pressed to think of a damage from gunfire that would cause both smoke and that instant sort of erratic operation of the helicopter. But there we are.
It's called movie magic.
Exactly. Suspending your disbelief.
That's right. Magic movie bullets.
Right. How's that? Yeah. If this scene played out with, a lucky shot from Simon and the Gazelle, helicopter starts smoking and the pilot says, we need to land immediately. And it just went straight down and landed in the first open spot it found, you know, without careening toward a building and then swerving at the last minute, stuff like that.
That just wouldn't have been fun.
Yeah. It wouldn't have been fun at all. Not for the viewer.
Especially not for the stunt pilot, who probably enjoys doing that type of stuff too.
Yeah.
Do you do stunt work also, or you just fly regular?
I've never done anything like that. I've got some good friends that do. In fact, I, you know, looked in the credits of this one that just to see, you know, if there's anybody I know, and I didn't know it, recognize any names in the aerial unit, but I've got a good buddy named Kevin LaRosa, who best known most recently for having done the aerial cinematography for Top Gun Maverick, and then also the movie Devotion. But he's a fun guy to know because in addition to flying camera helicopters, he'll fly, you know, sort of the hero helicopters and all kinds of things. So if you're watching, oh, like even like TV series like SWAT or SEAL Team or any of these sort of high action things where there might be a helicopter, like almost every time you see a helicopter start to take off with our heroes on board, if you look in the cockpit, there's my buddy Kevin.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
So he has a ton of fun in what he does.
Wait, and you can recognize him as like the is he like supposed to be someone else? Or no, is it just that they need a pilot? Say, this is the stunt pilot and you can see him.
Right. It's more the case of, you know, and he might be in, I mean, if he's in an episode of SWAT, he's in a, you know, an appropriate sort of, or at least reasonably appropriate police jumpsuit or something. But those scenes where, you know, we need to show that our hero actors, our stars are truly on a helicopter and flying, then, you know, you can't really have an actor unless it's Tom Cruise. And that's a whole other story, but you can't really have an actor in the pilot seat. So it just cases where he's certainly not getting a screen credit as an actor, but there's a pilot there and you can recognize his face.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. So then we get a lot of dialogue inside of this careening helicopter. You know, John screams, "We got a chopper behind us. You got a gun on board?" And like, he's handed a gun and he looks at it and goes, "What is this?" And then he just like, he has a small gun. And he starts, and he just like takes pot shots at the helicopter. Again, right. not really very smart. You know, basically missing every single shot that he tries. Do you think it would even be effective? Like, do you think that someone, I don't know the answer to this, can someone shoot from a helicopter or a small plane and stuff like that and really expect to hit another one with, you know, just by shooting, you know, a handgun?
I think, number one, I think there'd be a ton of, either a ton of luck involved or a remarkable amount of skill, but just sort of waving it out into the breeze and, you know, firing off a bunch of pot shots. I mean, you know, you've handled your share of weapons in your life, just as I have. And, you know, just doing something sort of freehand unsupported against a paper target 25 yards away, can be a humbling experience, but then, you know, put you in a helicopter and it's at night and it's, as you said, it's careening around and it's erratic and it's unstable. Then you've got all the relative wind from putting your hand out there, stuff like that. I think every factor that you introduce just reduces the chance of being able to do anything. But on the other hand, would you be able to resist, you know, if you were truly in this situation, taking some shots and hoping for a lucky shot against a bad guy? And I don't know that you could. I think you'd be firing maybe in spite of the odds of success.
Right, especially if your name is John McClane.
Oh yeah, if you are John McClane in particular, then you are absolutely shooting because you know you're a lot luckier than most people.
Of course. Well, I don't know if it's lucky or cursed. You know, the cursed, fact that he's been you know, constantly in the same type of situation over and over. So I don't know. I mean, I'm actually glad in this movie they sort of took away the whole idea of why does this keep happening to me, you know.
Right.
You know, they overuse that one in the second one, as we discussed, you know, two seasons ago about that. That,
yeah.
You know, it was nice to have the callback, but you could have done it once. You didn't need to do it as many times as you did.
Right, because as soon as the, you know, when the character is asking that question, then before long, the audience starts asking it, like, mm-hmm. No, seriously, like, how in the world would this keep happening to this that's one right. guy? But anyway, and it was a nice callback in this one to establish a relationship between the Gruber brothers and things, and at least give it a little bit of a that gave it more of a reason in my mind for, and I'm sure you've discussed this to the nth degree, but you know, why is John McClane involved in this one? Well, in this case, you know, the bad guy is specifically putting him in this position, and you know, it's not just another crazy coincidence.
Correct. But it's a crazy coincidence. It's a crazy coincidence because it's related to the first movie, you know, that type of thing from that perspective.
Right.
You know, it's I mean, I like the way that they connected it all together. It was done really well. And then after John shoots at him, Simon, you know, we get a shot of Simon shooting the machine gun back at him even more. You know, John goes, I can't see a goddamn thing. Hold it still. I can't see a goddamn thing. And then Zeus goes, oh, shit. And then the pilot goes, oh, shit. And then John turns to the pilot and goes, what do you mean, oh, shit?
Yeah, it's not what you want to hear from the pilot.
And then John says, between those high tension wires, see this wire? And then Zeus goes, hey, McClane, what the? Hey, we got smoke. We got smoke flying on me here. You know, as they're trying to find a way to land the helicopter. And then, you know, screw, truck, hold on. Here we go. And as soon as the pilot's confident the whole time, he's doing a nice job. You know, you got to give the pilot credit here for acting very well under pressure like this. No question about right. that. Because he shows his confidence in the whole thing and manages to land the helicopter along the way. And then we hear the voice of John, but you can clearly tell that this is 80 yard in, where he goes, come on, we got to get out of here. He's going to start shooting at any second. Which it's fun that they have it there, but the ADR is a little off with the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It pulls you out of it just a bit.
Yeah. And then he screams to Zeus, get him out of here. And he goes, Zeus, the belt's stuck. And he goes, I can't get it off. And he goes, look out, here he comes. Can't get out. McClane. And he goes, get him out of here. Where are you going? So, you know, it's once again, John is willing to sacrifice himself for Zeus and help out Zeus. You know, he understands that Zeus is in all of this predicament because of John. So it's right. It's nice the fact that he's willing to give a little bit of I don't know. He's acting more like a Samaritan here by helping out Zeus, by saying, okay, Zeus, you know, I got you into the situation. I'm going to do what I can to get you out, even though you're a civilian. But once again, what the hell are you doing up here in Canada with us?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, something else I had actually just noticed, you know, so scrubbing back and forth through the minute, we were talking about this helicopter. Certainly by the marking seemed to be a medical helicopter, but did you notice that about the 56 second mark, we can see a patch on the pilot's shoulder?
Okay. Yeah. I saw the patches, but I didn't look into any of them. Cause we see on his, on the pilot's, helmet, there's markings also and stuff like
that. Yeah. There's a marking on the helmet, which wasn't as clear, but like right at 56 seconds or so, you can see it's something port. It looks like maybe the Bridgeport Ambulance Service.
Okay. On the patch itself. Which actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because they were on the Long Island Sound. So therefore, you know, the fact that they would have, you know, that they were getting into a helicopter and somehow convinced the pilot to fly up to Canada.
Right.
That obviously makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
It does make you wonder why the pilot of a medical helicopter would have that little snub-nosed 38 revolver on board. But
you're saying that would make sense or it wouldn't make sense?
I'd say it seems a little bit odd. Like, if, obviously, if this is a police helicopter, you expect armed people on board, but you don't expect an air ambulance helicopter pilot to be armed.
Well, you never know who you're going to encounter. That's first of all. And I mean, I can talk about from the situation here in Israel, that most ambulance personnel do carry handguns with them.
Wow,
Because
that's really remarkable.
but again, it's partially because of where you are.
Of course, yeah.
I guess in Bridgeport you might not need it as much as you need it where I am, for the
Right.
you always need to be aware of your surroundings and where you're going to go help wounded and stuff like that. So
Now
yeah, so
that's
like for me,
a terrific point.
so for me, when you make a comment like that, for me, it's like, okay, that's an everyday occurrence, but apparently in America it's not. So, then it does still ask the question, okay, I don't know, maybe this pilot's originally from Israel. I don't know. He's like,
Could
hey,
be or
if
could
I'm
be
going,
yeah. The pilot could be ex-army as well, too. We find that so many of our police and EMS helicopter pilots come from an army background, and that's where they and that's we talked about finances because helicopter training is so incredibly expensive. If it's something you want to do as a civilian, so many people would get their training, via the U.S. Army, and then serve and then look for that civilian job after the fact. It's not at all unheard of, but it's, I think, somewhat uncommon to find somebody who says, "Well, I want to fly an air ambulance helicopter, so I'm going to just start paying to get my all my helicopter ratings and certificates and things." I said it absolutely happens, but it's not uncommon to find that they've gone a military route to get that training initially.
right. Okay. That's fair. That definitely makes a lot of sense. And as John is trying to think of a way of possibly trying to save Zeus, the minute ends. And people are going to just have to come back tomorrow to find out what happened. So, Hal, did you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute?
Nope, I think I'm good, Rob.
All right. Excellent. So, once again, we have nothing to say about the script. So we will move on to Thursday's segment, which is Off the Beaten Track, Revenge, Sibling Rivalry Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is connected to either revenge or sibling rivalry. So do you have some sort of story for us, Hal?
I do. There was a few things that ran through my head, and being the youngest of three boys as a kid, if there wasn't a lot of revenge, at least not a lot of sort of successful revenge, but in terms of rivalry, the one that really bubbled up for me was the story of my first ever encounter with mixed emotions in my life that I recall. And that was, I would have been either 4 or 5 years old, living in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we lived in this A-frame home that had a it was on a hillside and had a large wraparound deck. And in the back, butting up against the hillside, that was sort of the ground floor. But as you came around the front of the house and the hill fell away, that it became, it was higher up and it was closer to what you'd think of as a second story. And so I was out there. I had one of my prized Corgi die-cast cars, and it was a yellow Porsche. I believe it was a Porsche Targa. And I've just got it on the railing of the deck, and I'm just driving it along with my hand. And then one of my two older brothers, Eric, the middle brother, comes out, and he's got his Goldfinger James Bond Aston Martin, the DB5, also by Corgi. And so now we're having a very sort of sedate little chase, and this is fun and everything else. And then he reaches down and he takes the red plastic tire slasher and pulls that out of the hubcap of the DB5. And now he's coming up, and he comes up alongside my car. And again, we're just driving these with our hands, and he actually manages to snag the real rubber tire off of my Porsche with that tire slasher, and the tire popped right off. And then from there, it rolled a few inches and then went off this railing, down into the, you know, must have gone 20, 25 feet down into this like absolutely inaccessible bit of bramble kind of on the edge of a forest. So it was never to be seen again. So I call it my first encounter with mixed emotions because, first of all, this was really cool that the little gadget on the little Corgi Bond car worked, you know, did exactly what it was supposed to do. But on the other hand, one of my favorite little diecast cars was now ruined. And this, you know, this was not at a time when you could just get on the web and send Corgi an email and say, hey, can I get a replacement tire? There was just no, and to a 4 or 5 year old, there was no concept of that. It's just, my car doesn't have a tire now. And I remember digging through some other older diecast cars that were probably hand-me-downs from my brothers and finding a tire that fit on the little wheel, but it was overall was too small. So my poor little Porsche was wobbly from then on.
Oh, wow. And you never got it fixed?
I never did.
You still have it?
That one, unfortunately, I don't. I do have a reasonable number of toys from that era. Now that same brother who did this, he didn't end up doing this with the Porsche, but with I had a couple of dinky die-cast World War II airplanes that were really cool. I remember very vividly having a Stuka dive bomber that had a little metal bomb on it, and you could put a cap in it and, you know, release it, and then the bomb would hit and the cap would go off. And then I had a Hawker Hurricane that had a metal gear that you could rotate with your thumb, and it made you know, sort of butta 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 machine gun noises and stuff. And at some point, the same brother kind of went on a buried treasure kick and convinced me without really needing my approval that it would be really cool if he took these toys and then buried them in the hillside so that someday we could dig them up and it would be like treasure. And I remember trying to explain, said, but no, I want these now. And, you know, big brothers being big brothers, I was out overruled. So he buried them. And then sometime when I think we would have both been at least in our 30s, if not older, he made a visit to that childhood home, dug around and found, I believe it was the Stuka.
Oh, wow.
He found, he pulled it out. And then instead of, you know, bringing that to me and that being, you know, sort of closing that loop, he just went ahead and reburied it.
Oh,
still fun. Still there in a hillside in California.
So he had to, and he had to tell you that. He had to say, look, I found it. I found it and I just reburied it.
But yeah, but I reburied it.
Did he leave you a treasure map trying to figure out how to find it?
No, he didn't. And now with my dad having passed about 5 years ago, he's actually inherited that house. So perhaps he'll go back down with a metal detector and dig it up and give it to me. But I suspect if he finds it again, he's going to rebury it again and wait for somebody else to enjoy the treasure. So
sounds like it. Wow. What a there great you have story. It. What a great story. Thank you very much for sharing. Yeah, thank you. So unfortunately, Hal will not be with us again tomorrow. But we will still do a Friday segment. So the Friday segment is Name That Movie. So as we've discussed earlier this week, how this movie is based on a script that was originally called Simon Says. So what I did was I found a list of about 150 movies that all have different original titles. So
interesting.
The game is very simple. It's a simple game. I will tell you the original title and the year of the movie, and you have to try and guess what the released movie is. You have lifelines. You can ask for actors, director, I don't know, stunt pilots, whatever you want to ask for that might help you figure out the clue. Again, as I told you before we were recording, this is all for fun. You know, the idea is that you will hopefully get these, you know, so I'm not out to be able to say, oh, I got Hal on all of these. He didn't know anything. No, the opposite. I want to be able to say
I think that's where we're going to be in a few minutes.
No, we'll I don't think so. I wanted to be able to say that I chose the right movies for Hal to be able to guess those correctly.
Okay.
All right. So we shall start with a movie from 1982 which was originally titled Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Ah, of course. So that one, you're giving me a confidence builder, but that, of course, became released and best known as Blade Runner.
That is correct. Okay, great. Here's another one from 1995, To Infinity and Beyond.
From 95 to infinity and beyond. So was that the first Toy Story?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Very good.
Okay. For some reason, Toy Story is one of those classics that always seems like it's been around in our lives longer than that. Not
Yes.
that, I mean, 1995 was almost 30 years ago, but you and I are of a similar age, and
Yeah.
the 90s don't seem like a million years ago to
No, they
us, I
really
don't
don't.
think.
They really don't. I even remember when I went to go see Toy Story in the theater when it came out, and like who I saw it with and stuff like that. I mean, obviously it also came out the same year that Die Hard with a Vengeance came out, but yeah.
And so you heard me questioning, was that Toy Story 2 or 3? Or wait, wasn't the
Exactly.
Buzz Lightyear movie that came out just recently? No, okay, because
No.
that was 20 years after
That is
later than
correct.
that. But anyway,
All
okay, so far so good.
right, you see, you're doing well. All right, third one from 1982, A Boy's Life.
82?
Yes.
A Boy's Life. I have a guess, but it's only a guess. I'm wondering if there's a subtle hint. Well, did the movie end up starring a boy?
I don't know what that really means.
I mean, or did this was did the movie end up being at least in part about a boy, about a young male?
Yes.
Okay. Was that boy's named Elliot?
Yes,
Okay, then it was E.T. So
it
my original guess, but
was.
just a lucky, almost a lucky guess, but
Yes.
wanted to
Okay.
be sure.
All right, great. You see, you're doing well so far. You got three out of three so far.
Three out
So,
of three.
all right.
I feel like I should quit while I'm ahead, but let's
Well,
keep
you don't
going.
that you don't have the option
Yes.
of. You have to indulge me for two more. So
All
the
right.
next one is from 1995 again, a movie called Coma Girl.
Coma Girl
Yes.
in 1995. This seems like it should be sort of obvious and okay, I'm going to need a hint of some kind.
Okay, Jack Warden appears in the movie.
Jack Warden. Let me think. Now I'm going to need something.
Okay,
Give
Peter
me
Boyle
something
is also
else.
in the movie.
Peter Boyle and Jack Warden. Gosh, I am
1985
racking
called
my
Coma
brain.
Girl.
You said 1985?
1995, sorry. 1995,
1995. Okay.
Coma Girl. Sorry.
Coma Girl. Let's see. That was before Everybody Loves Raymond. Not that that helps me at all, but just thinking about Peter Boyle a little bit.
Yes. And it was after Young Frankenstein.
And after Young Frankenstein, so that helps.
The director
So,
was John Turteltaub. I don't
John
know if that
Turteltaub,
I don't know if that helps.
was okay. I think I've got something that actually gave me a little hint at the beginning, but it feels like it was a red herring. Was Sandra Bullock in the
Yes,
picture?
she was.
Then it was While You Were Sleeping,
That is correct.
but
What was the red herring?
well, the thing that was confusing me because I think I've only seen that movie once, but she's not the one in the coma in the movie, right?
Which is probably why they
So
changed the name of the movie.
yeah, I was gonna say, so I'm trying to think, and I couldn't have told you that While You Were Sleeping was 95, but I thought, okay, well, that was about that time, but there's no girl in the coma. The girl was awake the whole time, so that's
That's
why I
right.
just completely discounted it.
Right. Okay. I mean, just to give you a little bit of I mean we yeah. Okay. No. Well, I'll tell you after. And for the final one is from 1968, The Monolith.
Ah. That one's near and dear to me. I was born in 1968, and having been called Hal that entire time, of course, you're talking about the screen introduction of my evil AI alter ego, the HAL 9000 computer, and the movie 2001: A Space Odyssey.
That is correct. Now, were you did your parents choose that because of that?
No, that was very much unrelated. It's another story entirely. But I was actually named after an airplane, which does seem sort of prescient and correct. Back then, with some airlines, Pan Am being most famous, but also at that time, Scandinavian Airways System (SAS), each individual airplane was named. And my mom was pregnant with me, and my parents were making an annual trip to Copenhagen on vacation. And one of the names, which was a family name they were thinking of for me, was Harold, in a kind of an unusual Scandinavian spelling after an ancestor. And it was down to Harold and one or two other choices. And they got on board this DC-861 in San Francisco, and as they were walking through the door to get onto the airplane, they noticed on the nose that this airplane was the Herald Viking. And oh, so they said, well, that seals it. So they'd had the choices narrowed down, but that's what made the selection. And that airplane survived until the early 2000s, when it was unfortunately scrapped in Florida after flying as a freighter.
Well, thankfully you've outlived it.
Yes, thankfully I did outlive it. But being named Hal and spending a big chunk of my career in the tech industry, that seemed to make a lot of sense to a lot of people as well.
Yeah. Okay. Understandable. All right. Great. Excellent. You did a lot better than you thought you would.
I did a lot better. I appreciate that. My confidence is much higher now than I thought it would be at this point.
I'm so happy about that. That is great. All right, so Hal, would you like for one final time this season to tell people where they can find Hal Bryan?
Yes, absolutely. Well, find me on all the typical social channels of Facebook and Instagram and X at Hal Bryan. I'm on LinkedIn, too, if you want to connect professionally, I suppose. Also, podcast-wise, you can go back and listen to the complete, and I footnote that by saying there's special episodes coming here or there. Complete run of the Rocketeer Minute. Otherwise, our current podcast in production, the same co-host, Jim O'Kane, and I doing the October Sky Minute. That's out there right now. And then on the work side, you can find me on many but not all episodes of EAA's The Green Dot. And that one is for anyone and everyone who loves aviation. So I'm not that hard to find. So track me down and say hello.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Hal. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for MoveRoute Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, MoveRoutMinute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to MoveRoutMinute@MoveRoute.net. So Hal, thank you very much for joining me these last few days. It's been a pleasure. It's been a lot of fun.
It's always a lot of fun, Robin. I appreciate your asking me, and I appreciate, as always, you being patient with as we figure out the scheduling. Just the time zone difference is a challenge, but
But we make it work. We make it
glad to be here. We always do.
Exactly. All right. Excellent. I will be back tomorrow with another guest. But until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay. Thanks again,
Rob. Marching home again. Hoorah. Hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah. Hoorah. The men will cheer. The boys will shout. The ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.